So I'm Kerry Rivard. I'm an extension specialist at Kansas State University, and I'm located at the Olathe Horticulture Center, which is just outside of Kansas City proper. And we do a lot of work in the world of high tunnel production, and especially with tomatoes. And why do we work with tomatoes? Well, as it turns out, growers in Kansas, and I think throughout the Midwest and other places, tend to use high tunnels almost exclusively for tomatoes, right? And crop rotation is a big issue, one that Matt brought up just a minute ago, and we talked about during our discussion as well. And it's a big issue for a lot of different reasons. As a plant pathologist, there's nothing more exciting than to see a high tunnel full of sclerotinia and botrytis, but most of our growers don't like that, right? And in terms of the long-term sustainability of these production systems, we know that crop rotation is just something that is not going to be sustainable for growing in these systems. So what is the challenge to trying to utilize crop rotation? There's been several surveys that have been done of growers, including some of ours in Kansas, as well as others more nationally, and tomato always comes up as the number one crop. And it looks like people are really, you know, their idea of crop rotation is tomato, lettuce, right? And unfortunately, that's not really what a crop rotation is. If you look at the economics, you'll understand why it is that people are exclusively growing tomatoes in high tunnels. It's because they bring in the most money on a per square foot basis. If that high tunnel is your most valuable piece of real estate, you're going to try and get your highest return for that investment, right? And so this is off a publication that I worked with the Kansas Rural Center on that basically kind of brought together a bunch of economic studies from around the country and just looked at some of the different amounts of gross revenue per crop. And one thing to keep in mind when we're talking about crop rotation is the production window, right? I mean, we're not looking at lettuce as a potential rotation option for tomatoes because they don't grow during the same time of year. So it's good to communicate that with growers that a rotation happens on a 12-month basis, not just having another crop after it. But the challenge is we have to pay for these fixed costs, and that's the thing that growers always bring up. I just paid a bunch of money for this structure, or maybe NRCS did, but it doesn't really matter. It cost a bunch of money, so I want to bring that money back. So we've published with a couple different economic models, somewhere between 45 cents and 50 cents per square foot per year for structure. And that's based on an estimated 10-year lifetime of a high tunnel structure. And then we also divvied out like some of the, you know, sideboards are 5 years and plastic is 4 years, et cetera. We do a lot of work with grafting at the research station as well, too, and there's a lot of people that present this as an option, as an alternative to crop rotation, and I'm here to tell you that that is not something we should be communicating with growers. Grafting can be very helpful in the conversation of rotation, but they really don't serve as a functional rotation option. I do think there's some nice ways that rootstocks bring in diversity into the system, but it's not an alternative to crop rotation. So this is a slide that I've been using a lot in my National Extension program, talking to people about some of the projects that we're doing. And so we're doing a lot of very applied projects, just variety trials and some other sort of real production-oriented studies, trying to get to the bottom of some of these sort of medium-value crops, things like melons, things like day-neutral strawberries, bell peppers, which obviously isn't a rotation option for tomatoes, so that we can collect yield data and convert that into something that can provide us with some economic information for building a crop rotation. So you can see what I've done here. We have a 6-year crop rotation. These are all crops that we've collected data on, and then basically we can convert that into dollars per square foot. Now keep in mind, this is just gross revenue. This is not profitability, but you can suddenly start to see, you know, of course, our tomatoes are $3.66, but there's several others that are above $2 per square foot. I think with more research, we can increase some of those numbers as well, too, especially if you start looking at specialty melons. And with our strawberry systems, there's ways we can vastly increase our dollar per square foot revenue there. But when you average this out across 6 years, we suddenly have, you know, $4.09 per square foot, which means we're only paying about 11% for that structure. Right, and so over the long term, you know, you're still not paying a ton of money for that high tunnel. With those medium value crops, you suddenly have the ability to utilize crop rotation, right? And one of the things where I think grafting really plays a role, right, is we think about grafted tomatoes in our cycles. If we can bump that up from $3.66 to $5 a square foot, then all of a sudden it's going to help pay for some of these lower value crops over the long term. So the last thing that it allows us to do is it allows us to integrate cover crops. And that's where I really wanted to get to and just give you show you a couple of slides from a project that we're doing currently. This is a project that's in collaboration with University of Minnesota and the University of Kentucky. And Ashley Skinner is a graduate student working on this project at Kansas State. She actually presented yesterday and did a fantastic job. But what we're trying to do is, with that rotation, we suddenly have these windows when we can, where we can utilize cover crops. And we've got a summer, an overwinter, and a winter-killed window, right? And these are three independent experiments. And we're basically just trying to look at different types of cover crops and get some of the agronomic characteristics. How much organic matter are they going to produce? How much nitrogen will that contribute to the system? This is our overwintering trial, and what you can see is we got 80% of our nitrogen requirements for a bell pepper crop just by growing a combination of triticale and hairy vetch in this case. The last piece that I just wanted to mention is we've also discovered through this work is Ashley has a big interest in below ground arthropods, and so she's been working with our entomologist on campus to monitor the abundance and diversity of these below ground arthropods that are living after we terminate the cover crop and helping to decompose them. And what we found very quickly is that the amount of arthropods is definitely related to organic matter, but what becomes way more important is actually the soil water content. And we're finding that no matter what cover crop is down, if the soil is too dry, you will not have arthropods in there shredding up all that organic matter and contributing to that mineralization process. And so one of the things that we're learning as a take-home for our growers is we've got to do a better job of keeping our soils wet, and that lack of rain in the high tunnel is making a huge impact on our soil health. Okay, so I think I'm probably out of time, and I appreciate your all's attention.